Welcome to the Joint Committee on Natural Resources. We appreciate y'all coming today. We're going to be hearing the, and by the way, the date today is Monday, March 14th, 2005. We're going to be hearing the Department of Energy's budget. And welcome to Michael Grady, the director. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right, very good. Why don't you go ahead and get started with your presentation?
Okay, great. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, for the record, I'm Mike Graney, Director of the Department of Energy, and I'd like to really cover four things today. First, I'd like to give an overview of the agency, and in doing that, I'll be referring to portions of the first 11 pages of our presentation. Second, I'd like to talk about performance measures, and there's information in pages 13 to 17 and 37 to 47 on the performance measures. Third, I'd like to talk about a prioritized list, and that's from pages 18 and 19 of the materials. And fourth, talk about the budget itself, especially detailed summaries on page 26, and there's other information on our limitation requests in pages 20 through 26. And I'd be happy to go into as much detail in any of those four areas as you wish as we go through this afternoon. Feel free to ask questions as we go along. Before I start, I'd like to introduce the people with me today. Bruce Westerberg is Assistant Director in charge of our central services, including our budget presentation. Darlene Logan is our fiscal manager. Diana Enright is our communications director. And Larry Gray is Assistant Director in charge of the Energy Loan Program.
And very good. Welcome to you all.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First, I'd like to give a brief overview of the department and about what we do. Our mission is to ensure Oregon has an adequate supply of reliable and affordable energy and is safe from nuclear contamination by helping Oregonians save energy, develop clean energy sources, promote renewable energy, and clean up nuclear waste. That's sort of a thumbnail of the different things we do. It's energy is important to our economy, to our way of life in many ways. And to set the context, I'd like to go back to the energy crisis of 2000-2001. At that time, we had a number of events came together to sort of create the perfect storm for electricity supply problems. We had a very low hydro water year. We had problems in California with their deregulation problems that caused supply shortages. We had huge spikes in the price of electricity in our region. We saw the loss of thousands of jobs because of it. Many businesses had to lay off people. We had severe hardship on low-income persons. And part of that was caused by manipulation of the market as well, as we found out later. California had power outages, rolling blackouts, which is sort of the real breakdown of the electrical system when that happens. Fortunately, we avoided it because of some heroic efforts by all of our citizens to conserve, but we came very close a number of times. And we certainly paid a very high price for that energy during that period. The 2001 and 2003 legislatures passed some legislation to help us respond to that and try to mitigate the impacts in the future. One, we changed our energy siting process so we could get more power plants online sooner. Also to increase the diversity of supply, especially encouraging wind and renewable energy so we're not as reliant on natural gas, which has become very expensive in the last few years. Also increased, the legislature increased our incentive programs to encourage energy savings, to help stretch our energy supplies, and to help individuals and businesses withstand price shocks when they occur, to better cushion them against those impacts. Also encouraged development of renewable energy, more renewable energy as a way of supplementing and diversifying our resources. And we've seen the results. If you turn to page 8 of our presentation, it lists the power plants that have been approved and come online in the last few years. 11 power plants with over 2,000 megawatts came online since 2001. Now, they had been in the pipeline for licensing before then, but that has helped our region's situation immensely. California and Washington have also increased their power plant supply. Since 2001, the Siting Council, which is our citizens panel that actually makes the decisions for power plant approval, has approved another 3,400 megawatts. 200 megawatts of that is wind and cogeneration that's already operating. Another 600 megawatts is PGE's Port Westford plant that's under construction. We've also approved 140 miles of natural gas pipeline that has been constructed and put into operation. And that will help the entire state's natural gas infrastructure supply, both for power plants and for direct industrial and residential use. This year we have we started with what I would characterize as a good but not great water year. It's turning into much less than that. And I'd like to show you an example. This was our snowpack situation a year ago. And generally, green and blues are good, yellows and oranges and reds are bad. Yellow is 70% of our abnormal. Orange is 50 to 70%, and red is less than 50%. This is our situation as of February 1st of this year. So we could have a very difficult hydroelectric year, yet I don't think we will see a supply shortage situation, but it will have a real impact on the price of power, as utilities have to rely more on market prices and on additional natural gas supplies. So again, that...
Michael?
Yes.
Regards to the facilities that have been approved, how many of these are on this list on page number 8 are other than natural gas?
Mr. Chairman, the ones that are not natural gas are the state line wind projects. There's three units counting a different expansion.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the small projects, for example, the Westland Papers, Willamette Industries, James River, those are cogeneration. Using existing forest products mills for waste heat recovery and electricity. The others are natural gas. Natural gas has been the predominant source of new power in our region for the last 10 to 12 years. And in the early 1990s, the price of natural gas was actually cheaper than hydroelectric. But it has gone steadily up, and especially since the energy crisis 2000-2001, it's gone up. It came down a little after 2001, but pressures both for demand and the world oil and world natural gas prices has become increasingly priced as a world commodity. Our long-term expectation is pressures will continue to keep the price of natural gas high.
Okay. And the Halsey project, that's a cogen project.
Yes.
Out at the mill?
Yes.
I take it? Okay. Where are you at on the Calpine? Is that the Turner Energy project here?
Mr. Chairman, I'll be able to tell you more later this week, but the applicant, we just received a letter from them requesting a one-year delay in consideration, at least 1 year delay, if not longer. That project has been under review for over 3 years because it was
very controversial.
Very controversial. Yeah. It was held up at the request of the applicant. Normally, a power plant review takes about a year from start to finish. They requested at least another a year delay. And we're evaluating whether that request should be honored or whether this to ask our Siting Council to dismiss the proceedings. I think the people of Turner deserve some closure. and we're going to evaluate that this week. And I'll be glad to keep you and the other committee members informed.
Thank you. I would appreciate that. I would agree. I think this project's gone on long enough and has created a great deal of controversy for them. I think it's time to either fish or cut bait, I guess, would be the proper way to do that. Now, I also notice you've got one LNG terminal. Which project is that? Is that the Coos County?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. That's the one off Coos Bay. It's a fairly small one because it's limited by the size of the pipeline down there that was recently put in. But they have come in for a notice of intent, preliminary application. We have been contacted by at least three other potential developers that would all site on the Columbia River, two near Clatskanie and one near Astoria. Those would be much larger. I don't know if all those applications would go forward. Our guess is that no more than one of those would actually, if they were approved, would go forward and be sited and built simply because of the limits on the market and the infrastructure. But none of those other three have come in yet for an application.
Okay. What capacity do we have for additional transmission of electricity to the state? I'm understanding we're pretty well maxed out in most places right now. We're going to build additional power facilities. Where are we going to move the power to?
Mr. Chairman, the regional transmission grid in both Oregon and Washington is fast approaching gridlock. It's becoming a constraint because most of the power plants are on the east side of the mountains, of the Cascade Mountains. Most of the loads are on the west side. And there's limited capacity for additional power development on the east side. The Port Westward plant that was recently approved and started construction, that will help because it's on the west side. There's the ability to move electricity up and down the west side in both Oregon and Washington is actually pretty good. The project recently approved near Klamath Falls and another one that's pending there would help, even though they're on the east side of the state, in terms of they're right by the north-south transmission line, and that would add some stability at that end of the grid as well. But we definitely need additional transmission. It's becoming a constraint in terms of developing wind in central Oregon and central Washington. And Bonneville Power Administration has requested additional borrowing authority and was successful last year in getting congressional approval to begin some of these new projects that are needed.
Very good. Representative Shawsworth.
Thank you. First of all, I don't want you to be mistaken with this question. I'm not against power generation, adding on it to it, or capacity or any of that. But are we running out of capacity here because we need more, or Southwest United States needs more? And if it's the latter, exactly how, and I want us to, how is this state going to benefit from adding to this capacity?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Schopfer, Oregon has actually traditionally been a net importer of electricity by a large amount, although the power plants that we have added in the last few years have bring us closer to net balance in terms of the amount of energy we use. And California, since the energy crisis of 2001, did bring on a number of power plants. I think they've been doing their share to meet their loads. In fact, while we sell, the region sells excess power to California in the summer, often we will buy it in the winter. So the north-south transmission really does work both ways, and it's been to our mutual benefits. But that system needs upgrading. One of the things that was troubling about the recent proposal by the administration to bring BPA rates up to market rates is also the restriction on their borrowing authority for transmission upgrades. That would have a very serious impact on what we need in terms of improvements in our regional grid.
Thank you. Senator.
I don't want to backpedal too far, but Representative, you got my attention when I was still catching up over here when you were talking about one of these projects and said it's time to fish or cut bait, and I wanted you to set that in context for me a little bit, if you could, or with Mike's help. Which project is this and what's the problem?
This is it's the Calpine Energy Corporation, I believe is the proper name, that has long been seeking to site a natural gas plant, a power plant in Turner, just outside of Salem.
Turner.
And it has been very, very controversial in the city and has created an unpleasant atmosphere, I guess is the way to characterize it. City councils have come and go, and people have been, I'm not sure recalled is the proper word, but there's been a lot of controversy within the community over it. And I've been a supporter of the project for a long time. But it seems that because the company has, and I think Michael articulated it properly, has chosen to delay the project on a number of occasions, that it's probably time to either build the project or don't, one way or the other. And because I think it is not fair to the community, as being a very small community, to have this thing hanging over their head without resolution to it of some type. So that was the context of my comments.
Okay, and that's very helpful because I just happened to have an office full of people about a week and a half ago from over there talking about this, and that's why I picked my ears up. And I don't understand the whole context, but I would certainly look for some direction because I had the mayor and several others that weren't real happy campers in my office. And I guess it's all your fault because I'm sitting on this committee.
I'm happy to bear the blame, Senator, of your discomfort. Michael, thoughts additionally?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Shields, I don't know if you caught all of the discussion when you came in, but our siting council is faced with a decision now. Calpine has requested delay for at least an additional year, and perhaps longer, depending on purely market considerations, whether they could sell the power at what they would consider a good profit. The siting council has a decision to make to grant that request or to terminate the proceedings, and we're evaluating our recommendation this week. We just received a letter from Calpine Friday, and we're going to make a recommendation to the council this week that I think will likely be at the council should take final action to make a decision.
Follow-up
yes.
question.
Yes.
In that meeting of unhappy campers, was I right in hearing that originally, I guess it would have been Calpine, approached the city of Salem and somehow got turned down and ran into a roadblock of some sort and then ended up out there? Or am I wrong about that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Shields, I believe that's correct. I believe they initially did approach the city of Salem, which was not very supportive of the project. And at the time, I think the city of Turner was more supportive. But as Representative Krupp pointed out, things changed in terms of the local community support and support of the or lack of support from the city council.
One more
yes,
follow-up.
Sir.
It occurred to me from that group that the dimensions of the project changed, and that changed some of the local support or changed support into non-support. Is that true?
Chairman Senator Shields, the design changed in terms of how they would cool the facility and how they would meet, in part driven by noise standards, the requirement to meet DEQ's noise standards that required them to change the design of the plant. That raised different issues in terms of some of the local community. I don't believe the size of the project was changed, but it was a major change in design that was one of the reasons for the delay.
Yeah. It's fascinating to me that this poor little town of Turner that I have no investment in was subject to a lot of conversation last year around the aggregate issue with some people telling me there's holes all over the place out here. Just look at us. And this year we're back with this issue. Is this a town that kind of get short shrift, or what is the deal here?
It's a town that is strategically located, and that can be good or bad depending on
strategically
your...
Strategically located or short shrift might be two different ways of describing the same situation.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've just been through this. You consider there's about four or five things as being renewable resources, one of which hydroelectricity. Do you have any figures and what the that what type of opportunities in money monetary terms that hydroelectricity does for Oregon?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Nelson, in the back of our plan, we have some information about the amount of electricity generated from renewables. In terms of for hydro, it's mostly small hydro. We can get you information on how much both the large dams, the Bonneville dams that serve Oregon, as well as small hydro provides to the state.
You know, we're charged with trying to find the most bang for the buck here. So that's what I'm trying to get at in this whole thing, because I'm a great supporter of the hydro, and put my bias out and potential thought of that. A couple other questions. Why are there no refineries in Oregon? Do you have any
we're not refined enough.
We're not refined. Well, we are. We're too refined.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Nelson, that's really been a market decision, I think probably based on the load of the state and the fact of our proximity to both California and Washington, where there are refineries. There's not something the state can do to make a refinery here. We would, if an application came in, we would be the reviewing agency. It'd be an energy facility. But that's the developers.
We're supposed to be doing these benchmarks and performance measures. I mean, is there any chance we should be looking at saying is that there may be some reason why Oregon doesn't attract refineries? I mean, why would they be in Washington and California? I mean, we might have better land here, cheaper land, more open space.
More people, bigger market.
I mean, the Washington is only not quite double what our population is. I mean, what I'm trying to get to is that maybe it's a market decision, but maybe there's other reasons. You know, why? What are the benchmarks there? What are the performance measures you're making? And then just another question that's kind of off the top of my head is, we talk about pollutants and things like that. Can you give me some information on how much percent of the atmosphere is actually carbon dioxide?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Nelson, we can get back to you on that. I would need to do that.
That just came from my own information.
I might mention on your point on hydroelectric, our energy loan program has funded about $200 million in renewable energy projects in its 20 years, and a good portion of that has been hydro. So small hydro has been a significant resource that we've encouraged.
Okay, Representative Schaffler.
Someone told me in the hall, and I hear the most interesting things in the hall, that Oregon has a large capacity of empty storage tanks for oil and petroleum products, and they were going to look at some ideas for using them to hopefully bring down the cost of gas or oil here in Oregon. Can you shed some light on that? Is that true?
Chairman Representative Schaffler, I've not heard that. I'll have to check on that, and we'd be glad to get back to you.
Yeah, thank you.
And last question from the chair before you continue with what's just the very beginnings of your presentation. Will you be talking about your role with Homeland Security in regards? Will you be discussing that later?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
You will.
Yep.
Okay, very good. Please continue.
Okay,
thank you.
In addition to the power plant siting, bringing power plants online, we've also, as I mentioned, increased our efforts on energy savings and renewable energy as a result of the legislation again passed both in 2001 and 2003. And it's had a significant response. For example, our residential energy tax credit, and that provides incentives for energy efficient appliances, for solar energy and hybrid vehicles. In the year 2000, we had about 10,000 individuals taking advantage of the program. 2001 we had 20,000. It doubled in 1 year. And it's in 2004 it's almost doubled again. We had 37,000. And the amount of investment has increased from $12 million in 2001 by individuals to over $51 million in energy efficient equipment. Those investments are estimated saving at least $5 million a year to individuals in terms of their energy costs. Our business energy tax credit, we've seen a comparable increase. In the year 2000, we had about 500 businesses take advantage of the business tax credit. In 2001, it doubled. It was over 1,000. This past year, it had doubled again to over 2,000 businesses. So these are large businesses, small businesses, everything from industrial processes to lighting, hot water for small restaurants, or any kind of business use of energy that can be made more efficient is eligible for that program. We've worked with schools. The Staten School District, for example, has made a number of changes in energy efficiency. Clackamas High School was a new school that was built under an energy efficient program that by building in energy efficiency in the design, it will use about a third less energy than a building normally built to energy code, but didn't cost any more in terms of capital costs to build by planning and building in things like solar daylighting and passive solar in the design of the building. And we've worked with schools throughout the state to do that. And our goal is for every new school to be able to take advantage of that. For renewable energy, we have the largest wind farm in the United States and the straddles the Oregon-Washington border near Pendleton, the state line project. Kettle Chips here in Salem has the largest solar photovoltaic system of any food processor in the country, and it meets 30% of their load at different times of the year. And if solar electric can work in Salem, it can work anywhere in Oregon with our weather. It's not always this nice. So renewable energy has been a significant increase as well. Overall, and we got some summaries in the materials on pages 5, 6, and 14, but Oregon's energy costs are over $7 billion a year, but they would be another $500 million higher, except for the energy savings measures that people have taken. That $550 million is the equivalent of two power plants, and it's enough to serve nearly 550,000 homes. So it really has had an impact in terms of our economy and helping people respond to high prices.
Chair?
Yes.
The high price part. I read in the paper yesterday or today about now folks are talking about letting parties out of the deals they made with Enron, these contracts like PGE's, and locked into this big contract, and they can't get out of it, and the rates are higher than what they could get it for now. With that, and I can't remember who they were talking about, but it was at the federal level, allowing people out of these contracts because they were dealing with fraudulent, no good, low-down, lying-cheat environments from down south. Is that going to apply to PGE? Are you familiar with that article in the paper? And if so, would that apply to, you know, distributors like PGE?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Schaffler, offhand, I don't know. It may. It's a very complicated area. It kind of leads into two other things that I was going to get into. One is in our area and responsibilities of energy planning and policy analysis, and our energy plan, there's a summary of our thinking for the big issues are over the next 2 years. But we have undertaken with the Attorney General's office price investigations of the 2000-2001 energy crisis. And there have been some settlements reached that brought money to Oregon. The Williams settlement, and Williams is a natural gas wholesaler, brought $15 million to the state. About half of that went directly back to ratepayers in the form of rate credits through the PUC. About $6 million went for low-income energy assistance and low-income weatherization programs, and $1 million went for assistance to schools for energy projects, and we used it with schools who weren't able to receive the Central 1149 money because they weren't served by PG and Pacific. There's two other cases. The Duke case is, looks like the state will receive about $5 million from that, and the El Paso case could over time bring as much as $15 million in, although the time frame for when that funding would be received is unclear. And under the terms of those settlements, it's for general restitutionary purposes, so that to benefit the people who were harmed. So the criteria are pretty broad. The Attorney General actually makes a decision on how those funds are allocated, but that's an important function of trying to right wrongs. It can take a long time. In the case of these cases, this was damage done in 2001. We're also, just last month, I asked the Attorney General to investigate the diesel pricing situation, and we'll offer our technical assistance there. We've got diesel prices that are as much as a dollar a gallon higher than gasoline. For again, there's some reasons related to the fact we have no refineries here and we're at the end of the pipeline in some respects, but that hasn't explained that kind of price disparity in the past. So that's an issue that we'll look into as well.
By the way, what's your time frame for when you think the Attorney General's office will be able to report some initial conclusions?
Mr. Chairman, that's hard to say. Some of these cases can be resolved relatively quickly, and actually the Williams case and the other two from the power situation of 2001, unfortunately that's relatively quick in terms of these kinds of investigations. With potential antitrust issues, it can take years sometimes. And one case in the 1980s that resulted in settlement with some of the petroleum suppliers had been ongoing for some years, so I just don't have a good sense for that. It's the type of thing that, you know, once we start digging into, we can maybe get a better idea.
Very good. Okay, please continue.
One other issue as well I want to call to the committee's attention, and that is the PGE situation that Representative Schaffler mentioned. With the decision by the Public Utility Commission last week to deny the Texas-Pacific application, Governor Kulongoski has directed us to work with Peter Cogswell as Deputy Chief of Staff, and Corey Streisinger, Head of Department of Consumer Business Services, and taking advantage of Representative McPherson's legal expertise on bonds as well, to evaluate different options, both public and private, that would be available in light of the decision that was made. And I've got some information for you, both a statement from the governor announcing the creation of the task force and the charges given to them, as well as some brief outline of issues related to options. And we're just, I think at this stage, we know some of the questions to ask. We certainly don't know any of the answers.
You can hand those to staff, please. Thank you.
And I think two overriding concerns that the governor emphasized in his press conference last week was keeping the utilities' assets intact, the power generation stations, the other equipment that is serving PGE's customers, and keeping the jobs. PGE, is, with its corporate headquarters in Portland, is a source of 2,600 jobs in the state. They're very important. So in looking at any options, either public or private, those are two very important considerations that we'll be working on. We'll turn to two other issues and kind of wrap up the overview and then move on to other issues. The first is radioactive waste. Our department's responsible for radioactive waste in a number of areas. First was historically it was the Trojan nuclear plant. When that operated, we were responsible for regulating and ensuring safe operation. With its shutdown some years ago, we've been overseeing its decommissioning. The site has been decommissioning has been completed. There is spent fuel still on site, but it's in it's called dry cask storage, large stainless steel casks surrounded by cement that are immobile and present really no hazard to the public. The rest of the site is available for other development, including potential other industrial and power plant development, and PG has been looking at that as a possibility. We've also previously cleaned up radioactive waste at sites in Albany and in the town of Lakeview, a mill tailings processing plant that was there that left contamination. We're also working with the Forest Service and U.S. EPA on cleanup of some abandoned uranium mines in Lake County that's in the Fremont National Forest, in an area where people like to hunt and camp, and so it's important that that be cleaned up as well. We also do significant work on the Hanford nuclear reservation. The Hanford sites in the state of Washington present significant risks to Oregon. Thousands of people live in the 50-mile emergency planning radius in Umatilla and Morrow counties. Hundreds of shipments of radioactive materials pass through Oregon each year, either to or from Hanford. Hanford contamination threatens the groundwater on the site and ultimately the Columbia River. We have staff who work on the issues there. We have a memorandum of understanding both with the state of Washington and with the U.S. Department of Energy on how we raise issues and getting access to information and decision makers so that we have ways to have our concerns addressed and make sure they're being being addressed. We also train emergency responders along the shipping corridors, I-5, I-84, and principally U.S. 97, in the event of an accident, how to respond. There's a truck accident involving radioactive materials so that they're trained and can respond safely. any questions on that part, Mr. Chairman?
I was out in Senator Nelson's neighborhood last summer, and this fellow was talking to me, said that that furnace, they're going to burn all that biological chemical with their stuff in. He was talking, asking, according to him, that after that's done, they're going to decommission that and take it all apart, and he was wondering if you could actually turn it into some kind of power generation plant. And then there was another question I had for you, too. Oh, last interim we had this fella come to, I think it was general government, talking about the production of hydrogen, just taking everything you can imagine, throwing it in there, and hydrogen comes out the other end. But I guess, you know, it takes quite a bit of energy to get it there. Where are we at on that kind of technology, those two?
The first question, the burner you're talking about is at the Umatilla Army Depot for chemical waste. We haven't looked at whether that is something that could be used for energy production afterwards. I guess it would depend on levels of contamination from the materials. Certainly, it's that would be the primary priority consideration first, to make sure that there's no residue. It is a very high temperature facility, and we actually were approached before it started operating about whether this could be used for cogeneration while it's operating, and that would take away from the heat source that's needed for the destruction of the weapons. So while it's operating, no. Afterwards, we certainly could take a look at that. In respect to hydrogen, first, it's a fuel that we would consider under our incentive programs as a qualifying alternative fuel. So hydrogen-fueled cars, for example, would qualify for our tax credits and loans, just like compressed natural gas and biodiesel and other fuels. So we would encourage that. There is a lot of interest on the federal level in hydrogen. A significant portion of the U.S. Department of Energy's budget has been redirected from some other programs to hydrogen. A lot of research still needs to be done on the technology and how you separate water to create hydrogen. It does take a lot of energy. It has a lot of potential, and we're participating in some of the workshops and studies that the federal government has undertaken, and we'll continue to do so. But at this point, it's some years away, I think, from commercial practical application.
We have to get a one-day overview for this. We're going to have to expedite, I think, or we're not going to get there.
Well, the last item I had on the overview really was involved security, so I could go ahead with that, although that was the chairman expressed some interest in. So do you want me to do that, or should I move on to other things and come back?
What page are you on, or is that just from your...
That would be on page 10. There's discussion of security.
Yeah, just go through it quickly.
Okay. Since 9/11, we have increased our security efforts and worked with power plant owners, other energy companies, petroleum suppliers as well on security considerations, and they have undertaken and upgraded their security. We've offered our assistance where it would be helpful to them. We've also are part of a federal, state, and local network on security issues. We work closely with the federal and local partners. We've upgraded our own ability to respond in an emergency, including whether it's an accident or terrorism. We've updated the emergency response plans in each of the energy sectors. We've also established a backup emergency operations system in our building. FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, approved that and approved the operation of it in drills, found it was a real asset because we were able to activate it so quickly and have all our resources right on site, our email, our data and communication systems. And we had a real situation last July, an accident at Hanford where power rods on the commercial nuclear reactor there didn't adequately function and didn't shut down the reactor properly initially. We had a real life accident situation, and it proved very helpful having that capacity on site. So we've also upgraded security and worked with federal government on that in terms of these radioactive material shipments that go through Oregon, and that's something we're going to continue to work on. With that, Mr. Chairman, be happy to move on to performance measures.
Let's do that. What page are we on for those?
For those, starting with page 16, we have four performance measures currently. Three of the four. First is fossil fuel savings. And as I mentioned before, with the our energy savings is the equivalent of two power plants or about 500,000 homes. It's 45 trillion BTUs, which is above the target that that our performance measure is. But the details on that really are all the different conservation programs that we've listed in the back of our energy plan in the appendix. We give a summary of each of our programs. It starts on page 49 for the plan. In terms of numbers of people, numbers of projects, energy savings, and estimated value of the energy savings. Our second benchmark is the customer satisfaction for our conservation and renewable resources, and it has been high. We do periodic surveys because we do get a lot of customer interaction on the tax credits and other incentive programs. These are all voluntary programs we want to work with. Get a school to undertake energy projects or a local government. It's got to be something that's where we're responsive and it's user-friendly. We've worked to make that happen with these programs. We've also worked on making it easier for people to access our programs through the Internet. And our goal is to have all our programs completely online over the next year. The third benchmark is sort of a negative or a reverse benchmark. It's a number of jurisdictions needing corrective action in nuclear emergency drills. Our goal there is to have none, and We've been able to meet that goal in the past few years.
Where are the numbers for those benchmarks? What pages are they on?
Those would be back in 37 to 47, I believe. And there's our where we have the annual summary of our annual report for each of our benchmarks. The last one is the one we're not meeting is keeping CO2 emission levels at 1990 levels, that is a very challenging goal. That's one that a number of states are trying to meet or do better than. We have two initiatives recently underway. The West Coast Governor's Initiative involves the governors of three states, Oregon, Washington, and California, on joint projects that will save energy and reduce CO2 emissions. We also have completed recently in Oregon the Governor's Advisory Committee report on global warming with a series of recommendations, including more renewable energy development, more energy efficiency in buildings, and in the use of increased use of biofuels for vehicles to reduce CO2 emissions. So there are a number of efforts there. Those four performance measures are tied to two benchmarks that are listed on page 15. Benchmark 67 on emergency preparedness and benchmark 76 on carbon dioxide emissions.
Michael, Chair Morgan and I have, along with Monica, have and the co-chairs have discussed the performance measures and frankly felt that they're not helpful in us as the legislature in determining your agency's actual performance with the people that we both serve. Mm-hmm. They're fine in terms of kind of the grand scheme of things, and I would have no problem with you retaining them as an important internal measure within the agency. We would like to see you focus your future performance measures on. We took a look at your major areas of expenditure, your business and residential tax credit programs, your small scale energy loans, your energy efficient design program that you have going. And certainly your school district energy programs, and then focusing on what's the return on investment in those. So we're investing, I think you kind of hit on that in your initial presentation. We're talking about how the participation in both the BETSI and the residential energy program has, in essence, quadrupled over the last 4 years, or 2 years, actually, I think it is. That would be an important measure for us to see, but also measuring the timely processing of applications, both for your all of your programs, and then at the same time in the facility siting process. What we're trying to focus on is how well is the Department of Energy serving the people of Oregon in whatever capacity that you are. And the big picture is great, and those are important measures. We're trying to drill down to a little bit of a lower level. Senator Shields.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'm a little bit confused here. I realize I'm new to the committee. I'm not new to the Ways and Means process, but this is the first time I've ever had a meeting of the co-chairs and yourself and staff and then informing somebody when they're making a presentation in a public meeting like this of what you expect. Why wasn't this done in the weeks preceding this hearing to prepare them to come in and give us this information rather than kind of catching them off guard like this? I don't understand this procedure.
A very good question to ask. I would suggest to you that in previous hearings with previous agencies, I've made a number of suggestions regarding new performance measures that the co-chairs had felt was appropriate. So it's certainly not out of line with what we've been doing in this particular session of first round.
What I'm saying is, I've heard you make one or two, but this seems like a whole slate, and it seems to me that had they been given this slate of questions to answer, they could have come today with answers to them all rather than... It's a one-day hearing. I mean, you know, they're getting them today. They can't possibly respond in this first round. And I'm just wondering, and I will take this back to my own co-chair on the Senate side and ask bluntly, you know, what was your thinking here? You know, I don't want to ever be sitting in a situation where I feel like we kind of embarrass somebody by giving them a whole list, and I'm not talking about a person, I'm talking about an agency, give them a whole list of to-dos, you know, in a public hearing. It's essentially broadcast all over the
fair, fair criticism, Senator Shields, and Monica would like to share some thoughts with you on that.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Shields, kind of the process that the co-chairs have been going through is they are reviewing agencies' information just in advance of you doing it. So it's not like they've known this information for 4 weeks and then this is a gotcha. And I think a lot of the comments that were intended were really to be a dialogue with the subcommittee of here are some things that the co-chairs thought about it, not necessarily you have to do it this way, but more to start throwing out some ideas and enter a dialogue. And LFO has been passing some information back and forth with the agency, asking some different questions on programs. And actually, in many of these cases, I believe the agency has a lot of this data already. It's just a matter of gathering it and presenting it potentially in a different way. And they will be back in phase two. So those things that they can get to, they'll be able to do, or if it's something that they need to do more work in the interim so they're back at your next hearing in a future session that you'll have some different information.
Well, I will take this up with my Senate colleagues as a style that I don't think is appropriate.
Okay.
I think that they could, if the co-chairs are reviewing, they could get that out of a few days earlier and get the information to the people. I will also talk with other co-chairs like Senator Gordley next door. I would like to know if she's used the same methodology in front of the agencies that come in front of her. It's something, frankly, that disturbs me.
Okay. So noted, Senator. Thank you. Appreciate that. Yes, Representative Shoffman, you're
not really related to that, but I was in Redmond, Washington at the Pacific Northwest Economic Region Council meeting, and one of your staff was up there, and he's the fellow, forgive me for not remembering his name, he's the one that goes and defends a siting of a generation power plant. Some people will appeal it, say, you can't build it here. And he's had to do four in the last 10 years, if I remember the numbers right.
Heaven bless him.
And he's won every one. And he said what he would really like to see out of the legislature is just don't change the statute, you know, that relates to citing these. Because every time he's went before these hearings to defend the citing, he's had to refer to a different statute. Every 2 years we change something. And he's been successful every time. But if we could have some consistency for the poor devil, it'd probably be easy for him to succeed in citing these. So I just wanted to throw that out there. It was in a meeting, and I was kind of venting my frustration at the rigidity of the land use system. And I think at first he felt I was attacking the Energy Department, which it was not what I was doing. But anyway, I just wanted to share that with you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate that.
Anyway, take our suggestions to heart, and we would like to explore them further with you in terms of how we could design some performance measures. And a couple of the other things that we were wanting to, this is kind of a standard question we've been asking in this committee, is for all of the agencies that are involved with the emergency response teams, mm-hmm. that they can give us a, if you are the lead agency in any of those ERT projects, if you could give us timelines in regards to the conclusions that were reached in the ERT project, if you are the lead agency. And if you're not, don't worry about it.
Okay.
But if you've been involved in any of those ERT projects, that's a standard question we've been asking of each.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, sure. On the performance measures, I do think that we can take a look at whether it makes sense to have measures, for example, on energy siting and renewable resources and more specific ones on our other programs. I also think we want to take a look at the benchmarks, which two of them apply somewhat indirectly, but there really aren't good energy benchmarks. That's a more formal process to try to change, but it's something that we'll evaluate as well. We do have some outcomes summarized, sort of major outcomes on page 14 of our materials, and we can follow up with Monica on the additional information.
Okay.
See if we can get back to you on some of the specific points you've raised today there.
Outstanding
to do that.
Appreciate that. A couple of other things that we thought would be, especially with the school energy audits, mm-hmm. And a couple of these are are not direct measures of your agency, but you play such a big role in them in terms of the percentage of school energy audits completed, and then the percentage of school energy audit measures installed. Okay, so the percentage of your audits that have been completed, and I know that you're not the entire agency that it's not your total responsibility to finish that process.
No, although, Mr. Chairman, and this is in connection with the money the schools get under the public purpose charge.
Yes,
we do have that information.
Outstanding. Good.
Glad to provide it to you that offhand, over 90% of the school district buildings have received audits, and the number of projects have actually gone forward now for installing measures. I think about $10 million of projects have gone forward in 10 different school districts, and another $8 million or so of projects have been committed to by schools ready to go. But we can get you the details on that. We have to do that.
Okay, that'd be great. So measuring or giving us the information, rather, on the number of audits completed, mm-hmm. and then at the same time give us the universe of audits to be completed. Are all schools, schools,
all public schools within the service areas of PG and Pacific, and that's about I dare not throw numbers out on this quote, but it is about 90% of those have been completed. And that's where most of the initial public service or public purpose charge money for schools went to. The law required doing audits in a school district before the school district could move forward on specific energy projects. They had to do energy audits on all the buildings in its district. So that was the emphasis on audits first. But I'd be glad to provide that information.
Okay. And also provide us with how many of your FTE are engaged in these school audits. Okay, if you could provide that too. And then what's the length of time after a school has an audit that they're actually able to receive the money and typically install a project or install the recommendations, I guess, of the audit?
And on that will vary project by project.
Probably a lot of reasons.
Yeah. Right, but typically that's just a matter of months, as long as the funding's available. And in fact, we're in a situation now where there are more schools than the funds currently on hand, more school projects, but the funding comes in on a regular basis to the ESDs directly.
And the ESDs get the money, and then they distribute it to the schools for the projects?
Yes, the money actually doesn't go through us.
Okay. Representative Shoffley.
Thank you. And then the results of these projects, have you got data? Is it too early to get data showing the results? For example, North Clackamas High School's new high school, North Clackamas School District's new high school. I went through there and saw the daylighting, and I understand they're frustrated with the lights because you got to move to have the lights on. If you stop moving, the lights go off in the middle of class. But have you got data showing results from these projects and actual energy savings and cost savings?
We do from a number of schools and projects. The ones on this Senate Bill 1149 program is recent enough we may not have much data on those specific ones, but we'll check and see. If we don't, we'll get you the information we have on other school projects.
Mr. Chair, without stirring the pot here, I kind of sympathize with Senator Shields. It's our job to give all these agencies their performance measures, I think. That's what I thought our job was. And maybe it is to get good advice from them, but if we're handing money out to anybody, if I got an employee and they're working on my job site, by God, I'm going to evaluate their performance. It's going to be me to evaluate it, and I'll make the criteria. And I think that would be a good one right there. The results of data showing the results of this project that we put upon you.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Shoffler, in our energy plan and starting in page 49 there, we do list all our programs with actual energy savings as we've had experience with them each year. So where we have the projects go forward and we have a year's experience, we collect that data, we keep track, and we will do that on the schools as well under this new program.
Great. Outstanding. And how long has Senate Bill 1149 been in effect? Was that 99 we did that, or 2001?
It was both, and it had a delay where the actual measure didn't go into effect until 2002, March of 2002. Okay. So the public purpose charge funding for the schools has been occurring since then. And so most of 2002 and 2003 were doing audits. This past year, about 10 school districts went forward with projects based on those audits.
So you've been able to achieve 90% of the audits.
Right.
Basically in a little over a two-year time period.
We were able to use, in some of the buildings had been audited recently by the utilities beforehand, we used those as well.
Okay.
So we were able to take some shortcuts if it was an audit within a certain period of time and met normal auditing standards.
Okay. A couple of other things that if you could provide to us, to the committee, is If you're going to increase your tax credit promotions, how much? What does it take to do that? Is that a large administrative effort, or is that relatively simple? If you've already got the tax credit programs in place, and then what is the administrative cost per tax credit?
We can get that information for you, Mr. Chairman.
Great. Thank you very much. Sure. All right. Why don't you continue then?
Okay. Let me turn then briefly to our budget itself.
Yes, please.
Summary of our budget is on page 26. We've done it by functions by priority based on the prioritization list that I'll come back to as well. But to mention a few highlights of our budget, we have no general fund. Our funding is a combination of different federal sources or other funds, some of which we start out as federal that come through another entity and come to us as other funds, or they're from groups like the Northwest Energy Efficiency Alliance. That's a consortium of utilities. We also charge the applicants for business energy tax credit for the actual cost of the program and for our energy loan program, and we charge the applicants in power plant review for the costs of their review. Overall, our federal funds are down a little, about 14%, primarily because of completion of groundwater monitoring in the town of Lakeview for a cleanup project there. Also, USDOE, we're anticipating some reductions in their industrial and transportation energy conservation programs. It's offset by about a 15% increase in our other funds, including funding for schools from the Williams settlement that I mentioned previously. That was not anticipated in our budget for the prior biennium. We also are expecting, anticipating at least three large renewable energy wind siting projects that would be in addition to what we've seen previously. Our total net change in our limited budget would be about a 7% increase. And again, that's from $22 million to $23.5 million, and that's a combination of federal funds and other funds. There is an increase in our non-limited. It's a significant increase of about $32 million, and that is primarily for a package for Department of Higher Education. And
it's on page 20, isn't it?
Well, actually, the page 30, it's a program option package.
Oh, okay.
Lists the specific projects. These are deferred maintenance projects that at seven higher education campuses that involve significant energy consumption. Higher education is requesting those and will be financed through our energy loan program using our bond capacity, and universities would repay the loan program over time. We have $27 million, or almost $28 million, in identified projects there. There could be additional ones, especially these are focusing mostly on heating. There would be some electric savings as well, and a number of electric utilities have already contacted me about working with one of these projects. We anticipate the energy savings would be about $5 million a year in reduced or avoided additional energy costs. These projects would pay back between 5 and 6 years.
Now, Michael, do you have specific payback timelines for each project that you're anticipating they'll actually return enough savings to pay for the initial investment?
We've done a very rough initial assessment to indicate that, to come up with that $5 million figure. Projects do vary, that both the loan program and our tax credit in the case of private sector can finance. The only requirements in the tax credit is that it take more than a year to pay back, so it's not so inexpensive.
There's no incentive. Okay.
And it pay back within, I believe, 20 years, so it's not so long that it's really not cost effective. In the case of the loan program, we can tailor the loan based on bonds we issue. The loans can be anywhere from 10 to 30 years. So we have a lot of flexibility there. And we'll work with the Department of Higher Education and Department of Administrative Services, on each project there. That's the single biggest change in our budget is that package there.
And that's why actually your budget shows a substantial overall increase is really due to that particular factor there. If you take that out, you're only really at that 7% increase.
That's correct, yeah. Mr. Chairman. The other thing I should point out is that it's an error on page 30 where it talks about $45 million. That was the initial budget estimates that we had from DAS, but the final numbers that you have on page 26 show $32 million increase.
Okay.
I apologize for that. We should have picked it up in this page here when we missed that. You mentioned briefly our FTE. We're requesting that you...
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. Oh,
yes.
Can I ask him to repeat where that correction is?
Sorry. It's on page 30.
All right.
Right at the top of the page, the first line. It says fund limitations for loan programs supposed to be increased. Where I say 45 million, it's actually 32 now. 45 was the initial rough cut from Department of Administration.
But it shows up on 26.
That's 32.
Right,
if you
thanks.
do the math, it'll
gotcha.
Show up as 32. We are requesting, last session approved five new FTE for us, but you approved them as limited duration because you wanted to evaluate, see how the workload went. We're requesting that you continue those this biennium. We believe the demand from, we talked about earlier, the tax credits and our other incentive programs has continued to keep these people busy. We need them to be able to be responsive and be responsive in a timely manner in our conservation programs, and requesting two additional FTE to deal with the additional workload we're anticipating on renewable energy initiatives like the more wind development, like we hope on the biodiesel and biofuels incentives and other efforts to promote renewable energy. We're also requesting a reclassification of three positions that more accurately reflects their work. Two of those are professional engineers, and the third involves our homeland security efforts. We do have adequate funding in our budget for those packages based on the package we put together here on page 26. And at any point, I'd be glad to go through more details on any of those. This is the last item would be the 10% reduction that the request each of the agencies provide. And we provided our list on pages 18 and 19.
Excuse me, Michael, did you go through the your priorities?
That's what I'm talking about.
Okay.
We have not done that.
You haven't done that. Yeah, okay, good.
Page 18 and 19.
Let's do priorities and then reductions.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Again, I'm missing the point when there's no general fund, 10% reduction. Can you run me through that again? I'm kind of thick-headed here, you know. I don't quite understand.
I think we're all in consensus.
It'll, Senator, it'll be a fairly short presentation.
God help us if it isn't.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What we did on this was a focus on First Northwest Power Council. It's really not part of our agency, but it's a regional body that's very important that's attached to our agency. I didn't know how to rank it otherwise, so I put it first. Our others are driven by public health and safety and the impact of our programs, such as the business energy tax credit and the need for having adequate sources of fuel supply. That's why power plant siting and emergency preparedness are up at the top of the list as well. And the energy loan program, that's been a big program and has a big impact with the budget request this time. I think as you go down the list there, you could argue with any one of them in any of the locations there, but those were our criteria in terms of how we rank those. Public health and safety and big impact.
Right. Well, obviously with Hanford and mm-hmm. and the other issues, though, they really do take up a priority, it would seem. On the state building's energy efficient design, what is the what's the demand for that? We pretty much already have standards in place, don't we? Or have you been finding that you need to go back and some of that?
Mr. Chairman, well, that program deals first with new buildings and major renovations, that every new building is required by state law to be go through a process of energy-efficient design review. And so we have staff working with Department of Administrative Services when a situation like that occurs. And then in addition, we continue to work with agencies on their existing buildings to help reduce their energy consumption. And sometimes that's a matter of significant equipment. Sometimes it's a matter of what's called building commissioning and operations and maintenance. And in the case of Department of Human Services recently. We worked with them on three buildings, their headquarters here in Salem and another one in Salem as well as one in Portland that reduced their energy use by 30% compared to the previous year through measures.
Could you, and I'm very intrigued by that because I'm a big believer in trying to make our buildings as efficient as they should be, including my own home, as a matter of fact. Could you provide us a list of the, maybe the last 2 years worth of projects
sure.
that the agency's done for the state in terms of advising agencies on that, and give us the dollar savings would be helpful.
Be glad to do that, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, you're here.
Yes.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think that's, the Department of Energy, isn't that one of your major things is to help with conservation and renewables and all that great stuff that we all like to think about? And that wasn't that a performance measure? I mean, siting a power plant, that's pretty easy to see that. But this kind of stuff is stuff I'd like to be, where my, even if it's federal tax dollars, mm-hmm. what are we getting out of it? And as far as number one, the Northwest Power Conservation Council, you could probably just take a bunch of that money and just give it to the 9th District Court and say, here, go ahead, overrule our council all you want. Let's just get it over with. Forgive me for...
That is Representative Schaffer's editorial comment for the day.
They don't want to give it to them, they want to take it away.
Okay. Very good. And if you could also at the same time, how much of your staff is dedicated to this program?
Would
be helpful too
with our other conservation.
Right, the other programs.
I might add, we haven't overlooked our own building. We have been working to reduce our consumption,
really?
And our electricity consumption is about 19% lower than the previous year, and our natural gas about 16%. So we're trying to
be
successful.
Have you audited this building? It just must be horrendous.
We did work on this building a number of years ago, it is a challenge.
Yeah, well, that's a nice way to put it.
And that probably depends on which representative or senator is opening the window to their office.
Well,
and the breeze blowing through affecting the rest of the floor, I would imagine.
If you could figure out a way to catch the hot air, I knew you could generate
it. I knew you were going to say that. I just knew it.
Thank you.
At the same time, it is finding yearly savings. That equates to the bottom line here for the state government, and that's why I asked the question about how much staff time you're putting into, who's devoted to that, and, mm-hmm. and what kind of measurable results are you getting. It may be one of those areas we want to focus on a little more on in the future.
Sure. And Mr. Chairman, one of the budget charts shows a breakdown by program of our different programs, and see about 60% of our funding goes to energy conservation, and our staff number of percentage of staff pretty well tracks those percentages.
Does it?
As
where is that?
That's on
Michael?
Page.
I know there's another chart in here somewhere. It's not that big a binder. Maybe I'd like to find it.
25.
It's the pie chart. Okay.
Yeah, and that's a rough approximation, but it's also pretty accurate in terms of our allocation of staffing. Gives you an idea of the different programs. So the conservation and renewable resources take up the bulk of the work in terms of both money and staff.
Representative Sharp, can you tell me do you have something that shows the ratio of dollars spent by the government versus how much energy saved or money saved in energy, and have those ratios been getting closer and closer, or has technology made it greater and greater? Like for every dollar we spend on conservation, let's say you get $5 back, in conservation, money saved, energy saved. Has that ratio been getting closer to balance, or has technology made it? Are we getting a bigger bang for a buck, or a smaller bang for a buck? Is there a trend there?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Schaffler, I expect it's a mixed bag. We can look at that. Technologies have improved a lot, both in terms of energy savings and in terms of cost effectiveness. But it probably varies by specific component and measure even, but we'll be glad to take a look at that.
I'm just curious. Thanks.
Okay, good.
Chairman, I believe that concludes my presentation. Unless there's things you'd like to go into. While you were out of the room, unfortunately, we covered the security issue.
I was afraid you were going to do that. Well, you have a pretty good narrative there. I actually read through it before we got to it. So.
And I'd be glad to visit with you afterwards.
Yeah, one of the things that does concern me with the new, any potential new LNG terminal, that there would be designed into that from the very beginning, a pretty strong security protocol.
Yes, that's clearly a major issue that would be involved in review of the siting.
Yeah, very good. Okay, members, any additional questions? And what's in the book here primarily?
Okay, well, this is our energy plan that we're required to do every 2 years. It gives a sort of an overview of energy issues. It also gives you a snapshot of information in the first two sections of different sources of our energy, breakdown by both electricity and fuel, use of natural gas and petroleum. We also have a list of considered significant issues facing Oregon in terms of energy. For example, energy and economy, Hanford cleanup emergency preparedness, pricing issues of both petroleum and natural gas. And then at the page, starting at page 49, we've referred to a couple of times where we've quantified our different program results, and that could be a source of information for you too. But we'll follow up on the specific questions you had with staff on your questions there on our program results. So we've tried to give an overview of the energy both supply situation and how we're doing on energy savings and developing new forms of energy.
Very good. One last question. What is it? We had a spurt of wind power projects that came along, and then they seem to have died off a bit. Is that directly relational to the federal government's current program, or that is pretty much on hold? Or give us the status of it, I guess.
Mr. Chairman, a large part of the reason for this pause we had was the federal production tax credit for wind development that has been very important expired for a period of time. It was extended by Congress last year, so it is in force now.
I see.
And it's actually been expanded to cover other renewable energy, which is important. Unfortunately, it was only a 2-year extension, so we're going to be continuing to have this uncertainty, and it's an extension in terms of once you have your project developed, then you get to continue to receive the production tax credit. But it's so the credit itself doesn't go away, but its applicability to energy projects either goes away or has to be extended. So that's one constraint. The other one has been transmission access.
Yeah.
But we have been contacted by at least three different developers who are talking about if they go forward, hundreds of megawatts of wind turbines would be the same size, same scale as the State Line project. And these would be in various parts of central and eastern Oregon, Wasco County, Sherman County areas in there, a number of places, as well as further east.
Okay. Very good. Mr. Chair. Senator Nelson.
Maybe I'm wrong about this. It just seems like there's a contradiction in your energy plan, the renewable energy plan, and all that sort of thing. Is that you consider water as a renewable resource, and yet it seems like the plan goes. The actions of the administration are basically that. Well, we're going to
do away with water recycling, file lawsuits and things. I mean, I just see it's just some terrible inconsistencies here. The plan's purpose, and this is in Appendix C, is to encourage and accelerate the production of energy from renewable resources. But on the other hand, then you're saying, well, we're going to increase summer spill, and we're not going to use those renewable resources. It's just a comment. I'm thinking that this is all fine for us to listen to all this talk, but, you know, your actions ought to, at least the actions of the administration ought to reflect your plan, anyway. I guess this is your plan. And I know you can't comment on that, it just bothers me, I guess.
I understand, Senator.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Krieger.
Senator Nelson, when our Fish and Wildlife comes, they're going to have a better explanation for us on the summer spill, which fish were saved, wild fish, hatchery fish, endangered fish, numbers. And then I also was looking for some figures that if it was $72 million spill, because you divided that over a large number of rate payers, what did that cost the rate payer? Maybe it was 75 cents per household. So we need to look at it in that way, too.
I just think this overall thing that we're talking about, what's our most important natural resource? And from my viewpoint, it's children. Some other people's viewpoint, it's a fish or a bird. So I don't know who's right or who's wrong.
Well, if you're a farmer that has to irrigate, it's water. It really is, I guess, your perspective.
I would choose a child over water.
Sure.
On that right there, if you divide it up per household, it's not much. But if you got a irrigation electric bill of thousands of dollars, now you're talking about a chunk of change. And we've heard this through the Water Committee, and I've followed this rather closely the last couple of years. And if you add all the fish up, it's a lot of fish. But if it's only the endangered list fish, it's not that many fish. And if it weren't for the Endangered Species Act, we wouldn't even be having this conversation. We'd be producing power with that water. So it is all about the endangered species fish. And that's my opinion, for what it's worth. But I share your frustration. I pray to God we don't spend any money from ratepayers to sue anybody, by the way.
Well, we're certainly spending tax dollars too.
And we've talked in this committee and other agents about cultures of the agencies and the culture of how we're doing. And we're just going all in the wrong direction with this culture thing. We're trying to protect the wrong things. We ought to be trying to protect children. We don't seem to do that. We don't educate them. We don't spend enough money on them.
Mr. Chair, forgive me, I got to say this for the record, too. In light of the fact that the state of Washington, according to the figures that have been handed to me by all kinds of state people, the state of Idaho takes 4% of the annual flow, Idaho takes 4%, Washington takes 2.7%, and Oregon only takes 0.3% of the annual flow to do all kinds of stuff with. Now, for the life of me, I'll never understand that ratio. But I'm sorry, right, Greg, and you guys have a lot of stuff that you don't want to talk about.
All right, anything further, members? Hearing nothing, we are adjourned. Thank you very much.
Marine
Board.
We'll give them.
Okay.
There's a lot of money there, isn't there?
Michael, thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Oh, yeah. Keep up the good work. Good stuff.